puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
You know, Gordon Goldsborough has a way with words, his riddles, his puns, but something, a phrase he said last week really stuck out, a potpourri of demolitions. Nice one, Gordon, and I liked it. Stuck in my head. Remind us what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, you know, I always wondered, you know, what you call a multiple of demolitions. You know, you have a murder of crows and a gaggle of geese. Well, a potpourri of demolitions. There you go.
Okay, so today's a bit different, right? Abandoned Manitoba.
Yeah, well, faithful listeners know that occasionally we have episodes where we update information because, of course, things are changing. So I promised last week that today we would talk about various demolitions and miscellaneous updates.
Okay, so where should we start?
Well, 7 months ago, back in August of 2020, we talked about blacksmith shops around Manitoba. These are, of course, throwbacks to an earlier time when repairs and maintenance parts for equipment could be manufactured locally by a blacksmith. But they're increasingly rare today. So we talked about former blacksmith shops, ones that weren't in operation at Cartwright, at St. Francis Xavier, at Waskada, and Oak Lake. But I neglected to mention that there is a blacksmith shop at Headingley, run by the fifth generation of the Bell family, that is still thriving. It was established in 1917, so it's been in operation for over 100 years. And today, the company specializes in trailer hitches, tow bars, bike racks, cargo carriers, and all various miscellaneous truck accessories.
Now, I have to go back to that potpourri of demolition. Can you give us some examples?
Well, back in July of 2020, we discussed a list of 10 endangered historical structures that the Manitoba Historical Society had publicized for Canada's Historic Places Day. Well, unfortunately, two of the 10 structures on that list have fallen or are soon to do so. So, for example, in the early hours of the 25th of November, the palatial Gordon House on Wellington Crescent here in Winnipeg, that had been home to several noted Manitobans through its over 100 years of life, was demolished to make way for a multifamily residence. In Brandon, the International Harvester Building on Pacific Avenue is set to be demolished. I'm not sure if it's been demolished yet, but I'm told it's coming down soon to make way for an expansion of the 18th Street Bridge. A third structure, the grain elevator at Tyndall, will probably be demolished sometime this year if my sources are correct. But meanwhile, speaking of grain elevators, three of them are being demolished right now, two at Pearson and one at Winnipegosis.
Well, speaking of grain, I understand that one of your updates pertains to a grain-based product.
Yes, indeed. Back in late November, we talked about Harvey Kavener. He was a Winnipegger who in 1927 invented a new hot porridge called Red River Cereal, made from cracked wheat, cracked rye, and cracked and whole flax. I have to say, by the way, that opinions about Red River Cereal are definitely mixed. It does have a lot of very faithful advocates, but I know that some people have described it as looking and, frankly, tasting a little bit like birdseed. I said at the time that the cereal was still available today, but unfortunately, I was advised by one of our listeners that that is no longer the case as of mid-2020. But listeners who may be jonesing for some Red River cereal have at least a couple of options. I found that there are several recipes online for making it yourself. As long as you can find the ingredients, you can make some yourself. Alternatively, I found at least one website that was offering a product called Canada's Great Northern Style Hot Cereal, and it was purportedly better tasting and healthier for you than Red River cereal. So there you go, another update. But there actually is another of our updates that relates to a different reference to Red River.
What do you mean?
Well, in early December, we talked about immigration sheds, you know, the primitive buildings where new immigrant families were accommodated before they found a more permanent place to live. So ones we talked about were ones at Scandinavia, south of Riding Mountain National Park, and the Shantz immigration sheds near Niverville, where the early Mennonite settlers spent their first few nights in Manitoba before occupying what would later become the Mennonite East Reserve, east of the Red River. Well, Ernie Brown, a good friend of mine and an excellent Manitoba historian, reminded me that I overlooked buildings at the site of Fort Dufferin. Fort Dufferin's on the bank of the Red River near Emerson. It was built in 1872, and it was used for a variety of purposes in its early years. So initially, it was used by the International Boundary Commission that traveled across the West, marking the boundary between the United States and the new nation of Canada. In 1874, the buildings were occupied by a contingent of Northwest Mounted Police officers as they prepared to ride west to Alberta. But finally, in 1875, the buildings were used as immigration sheds for some of the later arriving Mennonites who were going to take up land in the West Mennonite Reserve. And in fact, one of the buildings at Fort Dufferin has been restored and is being used today as a museum.
And finally, Gordon, I understand there is an update or a few updates from one of our discussions last month.
Yeah. So on the 14th of February, I talked about the upcoming deadline for nominations for the 2020 Margaret McWilliams Awards that are given for excellence in writing about Manitoba's history. Now, that deadline has passed, and I'm pleased to report that 13 books published in 2020 have been nominated. Now, what's going to happen is that the jury will read all of the nominated books and make their final decisions so that the award winners will be able to be presented at the annual general meeting of the Manitoba Historical Society in late June.
Now, Gordon, I know there were several categories in this. One of them was the scholarly history category. So what do we find out about that?
Well, there were three nominations in this category. One was a history of psychiatric nursing in Manitoba. It was written by Brandon University professor of nursing, Beverly Hicks. In fact, Brandon University was the first university in Canada to grant a baccalaureate degree in psychiatric nursing. The second book, edited by Rhonda Hinther of Brandon University and Jim Machorek of the University of North Dakota, has a series of chapters on the history of civilian internment in Canada, you know, where Canadians were basically in jail. The most notable examples, of course, being Japanese Canadians and Ukrainians, but also others. And the third scholarly book by Sarah Carter of the University of Alberta examines the hard work done by Prairie women to gain the right to vote. And of course, that was in 1916.
We had Beverly Hicks on the show to talk about her books. I'm so glad that she was recognized in that category. Okay, so the next category, local history. What about that?
Well, there were three nominations, including a CBC connection. One of the books was by CBC reporter Darren Bernhardt, his book of sort of historical oddities of various sorts, a wonderful book. There was a history of museums in Manitoba, and specifically how the Manitoba Museum came to be, that was written by retired museum curator Jim Burns. And the third book was Profiles of Trailblazing Women Through Manitoba History by Judy Wadiuk on behalf of the Nellie McClung Foundation. But in addition to those three, there was actually a subcategory in the local history genre that it was three books of memoirs. One of them was by Tanis Richardson, a very prominent local supporter of Winnipeg's art and cultural institutions. A second memoir was by lawyer and former university professor Jack London. A third was by Altona writer and editor Lois Brown on growing up on a farm in southern Manitoba. And the last one was by the late Doris Doan Pratt, a Dakota elder who recalls the challenges she faced in bringing attention to the needs of her people.
And we had Tanis Richardson on the show just a few weeks ago. So really proud of all the accomplishments of the various writers who celebrate local history. One more category, the popular history category. What about that?
Indeed, there were three books there, too. The first, a book of rare historical photos of Portage-la-Prairie, compiled and annotated by the Municipal Heritage Advisory Committee there in Portage. The second, a collection of magnificent photos of Winnipeg's historic Exchange District by photographer George Mitchell. And the third, just to show how diverse the submissions this year were, a novel by writer and humorist Andrew Unger. Some listeners may know that he is the creator of a very popular satirical website called The Daily Bonnet. And his book documents the trials and tribulations of a writer that was hired to do a history book of the fictional Mennonite town of Edenfeld.
Where can listeners find more information about the nominated books?
There is a webpage on the Manitoba Historical Society website that has complete details. It has pictures of the books, it has more information about them, and it has links to the places where you can go to find out even more.
Thanks for this, Gordon. What's the clue for next week?
Well, when we talk in this series about the history of places, the events that we're considering typically happen no more than a couple of hundred years ago. Next week, however, we're going to discuss the history of a place in southwestern Manitoba that goes back several thousand years.
Oh, wow. We really are getting to history there. Gordon, thank you for this.
You're most welcome, Nadia. Talk to you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.